Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, a musician from Walnut Creek makes it to the quarterfinals of America's Got Talent. Then Misfit Cabaret celebrates 10 years of out-of-the-box naughty fun on stage, and we look back at a documentary about women scientists trying to save little brown bats from extinction. Today's show is about reality and fantasy. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. NBC's America's Got Talent is celebrating its 20th season. There's a singer-songwriter from the Bay Area heading into the quarterfinals next week. Cole Swenson lived in Piedmont and later spent his teen years in Walnut Creek. The 23-year-old is also a musician, like his parents. And, his mellow folk songs are very introspective. That music you heard is from his debut EP, Soul Center. Cole Swenson lives in Los Angeles now, and I spoke with him about his music and why his audition stood out to the America's Got Talent judges. Cole Swenson, welcome.
Thank you so much. I feel so blessed to be here.
I'm so excited for you. I love when good things happen to young people.
Thank you.
And this is a big thing, Cole. You made it to America's Got Talent.
Yeah, to get to do it with my mom too is, yeah, it's so special. It feels like definitely meant to be. And I've had the most amazing experience with the people on AGT.
Music runs through your DNA, Cole, because both your parents are musicians. And I imagine it was not easy to ignore that calling.
Yeah. Both my parents inspire me a lot. My dad went to Juilliard when he was only 17. He was living in New York City alone at 17, just like crazy and just grinding. And he ended up transferring to Eastman. And that's where my mom went to school for cello. And she got her master's, and that's kind of where they met. Some good role models for sure.
Yeah. Now, are they still together or no?
They're not together. They separated when I was about 9. They're the most amazing people. Sometimes the most amazing people aren't the most amazing together.
In your bio, you describe yourself as creating music that cuts through the mental noise. And I really like that because when I listen to your music, I do get still. And Cole, there's so much noise right now out in the world.
There is.
Why did you want to take that approach? Or what caused you to make this music that causes us to pause and really listen?
I was pretty lost in school growing up. I had pretty bad ADHD as a kid. And I felt like a little bit disconnected to academics. But I had this deep feeling that I wanted to express myself. And I didn't know how. So I think I kind of reached a point in high school where I got really low. I was feeling really depressed and I lacked so much purpose. And that's exactly when I started writing songs about all that stuff. I started learning how to produce. I got Logic Pro. I started putting songs out. And the response that I got was that people all over the world feel kind of disconnected and misunderstood, a little bit lost without a purpose. And once I got that feeling of connection on such a beautiful, deep level to someone who's a stranger across the world, I just was that's it. That's what I have to do with my life.
And also too, you wear your heart on your sleeves, in your songs. Yeah. How did you find the courage to be so vulnerable?
I grew up with my mom a lot. My dad is an incredible person, but he was traveling all over the world, playing and teaching. And my mom just kind of switched her career path and moved into nursing. So she worked night shift. And I would just kind of show my mom these songs when I was 15 or 16. And they were horrible. They were terrible songs. But she never really critiqued them. I think if she wouldn't have been as accepting and encouraging of my first couple songs, I wouldn't have had the courage to kind of put out these records that are kind of this internal dialogue of transitions I'm going through as I'm getting older.
So earlier this summer, you auditioned for America's Got Talent and you performed your own version of Coldplay's Viva La Vida while your mom played the cello.
Yeah.
And that's a big song because it has about a billion views on YouTube. That's a big song, Cole, to to perform, and very courageous too. So what was that like to be on that stage and to share that spotlight with your mom? Because she looked at you so lovingly and with so much pride.
Yeah, I would say it was one of the more challenging things I've done in my life, like pushing myself like pretty far outside of my comfort zone. And like putting, you obviously put yourself in a position to be judged, but I think the feeling was so strong to just go into this experience, just being myself. And then to have like my mom with me, it just made me that much more comfortable to just accept being myself. And if that wasn't really what they were resonating with, I was willing to just accept that. So I kind of had like I don't know if I really told anyone this, but when we were backstage before we went on, we looked at each other and we were kind of like, it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter if the judges like it or not. Like, we're going to go out on stage and have this experience together, which like is crazy. Like, it's crazy. Like, no one ever gets to experience that with their mom. And I think that coming into that with that type of mindset really like calmed my nerves. And then once I started singing, I go to a different place. It's like an autopilot.
I used to rule the world. Seas would rise when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own. 1 minute I held the key. Next to the walls that closed on me, I discovered that my castle stands upon pillars of salt.
Yeah, as Simon Cowell complimented you for not following the herd, and that you gave the performance that you wanted to give, right? And not that which you thought others may want to see, you followed your heart. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with singer and songwriter Cole Swenson. He's going into the quarterfinals as a contestant on NBC's America's Got Talent. And you can see him perform again on Tuesday, September 9th. And you can vote for him, too. So, Cole, in addition to being on a huge, huge show, America's Got Talent, you've also released some new music. The title of your new EP is Soul Center.
Yes.
So what does soul center, what does that mean, soul center?
I think soul center for me kind of represents all the people and all the experiences that kind of mold the person that we are. So that's really what I wanted to get at with this EP, to kind of talk about overcoming, you know, letting go of long-term relationship with someone you love, and you know, reflecting on what's important after like all this. You know, the world's been through some chaos. And I think what I've found is that like my family is kind of the anchor for me.
And on this EP, Our Eternity is a very tender song about your dad.
Yeah.
So tell us more.
Yeah. My dad is the most hardworking person I've ever met. I think he was doing a lot. It kind of caught up to him. And last year he had to have a heart surgery. That was really scary for our whole family, because like he's like the support, he's like, you know, the wisdom and the, so to see him like have to go through that was really tough. The month when he was finally able to play violin again is when he came over and recorded this with me. It was shortly after his heart surgery that he played this. He had me tearing up, like, recording it.
the video is gorgeous too as well. Your videos are really beautiful. Lots of nature in the background. Visually and musically cold. Your work cuts out the outside noise. You really make us sit with you and be with you in the music and visually wherever you are. If you're sitting on a hillside in Hollywood, you know, looking at the skyline of LA, you bring us there. What is the inspiration behind the style of the visuals?
Thank you so much. That really means more than you know. In terms of visuals, I think with Our Eternity, because of the depth of the emotion of my dad's playing, I wanted to create a visual that encapsulates the full spectrum of emotion. So it kind of goes through this whole phase of like self-reflection into like letting go of this pain and this negative emotion. And then at the end, it's like this joy. But I have to give a huge shout out to my roommate, who's a filmmaker. And he literally shot this with just him. So it was one person who shot basically the whole music video and creative directed it. He's like my best.
What's his name?
His name is Tianxi Wang.
Okay. So we got to look out for him.
Yeah.
He did a fabulous job. It's really beautiful.
He's awesome.
Okay. So Cole, there's a lot of family and themes of family in your music in this new EP. And also too, you talk about romantic love because you do be writing the heartbreak songs, the heartbreaking songs. I was like, oh, you heard me. But they're beautiful and they're lovely. And so one song that comes to mind is the Farmer's Market song, which I thought was a unique title. And I love the line where you talk about the breakup and you're packing up your ex-lover's stuff and it's in a shoebox. And I just thought, oh my goodness, like you had this relationship, this love, this big heartbreak, and it ends with just this shoebox. That was, to me, that was good writing and good visuals. And I know you're a storyteller, you know, folk definitely is part of your music. So tell us more about the Farmer's Market song and the inspiration behind it and whatever else you want to tell me about it.
Lost in your arms, lost in you. I've seen those eyes.
Well, I guess I really fell in love for the first time when I was 18. I was with my partner, this girl, for 4 years. So we both moved to LA at the same time, and we ended up on a fundamental level. I felt like, as much love that was there, we weren't the most compatible people. And, you know, when you're with one person for 4 years, you become an adult with someone, and then all of a sudden it feels like that person becomes a stranger in your life. So that relationship kind of ended, and then it must have been like 6 or 7 months later, I went down on a Sunday to the farmer's market, the Hollywood Farmer's Market. And I was just like walking through the vendors and the stands. And we just used to do that. Like we used to go to like specific stands and just all these different things were really hurting me, like just hurting me and reminding me of that like closeness that I had with her for so many years. And I came back and I just felt this like pain and I didn't know what to do. So I just sat on my desk and started writing. And this whole song just came out in like an hour at this desk right here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, it's the fact that you were able even to come up with that in an hour. And the video, again, like your other videos, is really beautiful and gorgeous.
Thank you.
And hits your heart, too. So my last question, you're going to be back again, back on stage on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
How do you hope this show and this exposure changes your career? What do you hope to get out of this?
For me, the bigger picture is really important. There were just a lot of moments, and specifically in high school, when I was just really struggling with like identity and figuring out how to be okay with myself. So I hope to kind of make the soundtrack for other people who need some place to feel kind of understood. I think more than ever right now with social media, we're getting so isolated, spending way too much time in our rooms and separated. And it feels like it's harder than ever to meet people and make those connections. So if I can make music that makes people like all over the world feel more connected to themselves and realize that they're not like isolated and alone, that they feel connected to this beautiful like mosaic of everyone, because we're all experiencing the same things, then I'm like, that's okay. If I can make enough money to take care of myself and my family, that's all I need to do. I don't need anything much more than that, you know?
Cole Swenson, it has been a pleasure, and I'm excited for you, and good luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm honored.
Cole Swenson's debut EP is Soul Center. Watch him compete in the quarterfinals on NBC's America's Got Talent on Tuesday, September 9th. And coming up, bust out your fishnet stockings and big pink wigs. The founders of Misfit Cabaret are here to talk about their show's 10th anniversary. We'll be back.
I watched you walk into my door.
Hey, Daddy-o. Has life got you feeling low? Has your story turned a dismal shade of gray?
That's okay.
You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. For a decade, audiences have been enticed and entertained by Misfit Cabaret. The show is a delightful, naughty blend of burlesque, circus, magic, drag, puppets, original music, comedy, really cool costumes, and a whole lot more. It's very San Francisco. And the variety show is celebrating their 10th anniversary. Misfit Cabaret presents Till Death Do Us Part is next Friday, September 12th at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. And here to chat with me are Misfit Cabaret founders, Kat Robichaud and Jordan Nathan.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
I am thrilled you all are here. First of all, people can't see you, so I have to describe how gorgeous you both look. So you have berets on. They came in with red and black and white color coordination. you all look really, really fabulous. I see gloves. I see polka dots. Yes, all of that. Bustiers. They are looking fabulous. Makeup is fabulous.
Thank you.
And fabulous wigs. So I'm just so happy you're here. I love all of that. I love all of that. So that is very inside. That is me. Right. It's like that's a lot of us too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You just need an hour. You just need an hour to an hour and a half of your day to dedicate to
To just doing it.
This is usually not the norm. We're usually in sweatpants and t-shirts, no makeup.
It's good to start making it the norm though. It's good to dress up and show up for shows and when you're going out.
Oh, absolutely. When I go out, yes.
Okay, let's for people who's talking. So,
I'm Jordan Nathan. I am one of the producers of Misfit Cabaret. I am mostly behind the scenes when it comes to Misfit Cabaret.
And I'm Kat Robichaud. I am the quote unquote star of the show, and I write the original music. And I am the cat. Well, no, I think that I heard the cats, and Jordan heard the cat.
Okay. I think so. I think that makes sense. You know, so I host another show called Sights and Sounds Picks where artists come on the show and they recommend arts and culture things to do. And I was telling you earlier, I think aside from Lake Merritt, Misfit Cabaret comes up the most. So I've been hearing about your show for so long and just people love this show. Mm-hmm. How did you both meet and just come up with this fantastic production?
I'll take this one.
Yeah, you take it, Jordan.
I'll take this one. So when I moved to the city, I started helping and managing a speakeasy venue in SoMa. And Kat was hired by a good friend of ours to do their teak party. That was a speakeasy tea party.
Victoria Victrola.
Yes, yeah. Victoria Victrola. And it was just a really charming evening, and a bunch of local performers would come in and do guest slots. Kat was one of them. And I was, as a deal with the owner, so that I didn't have to get paid very much. I got a night where I was able to do whatever party I wanted to do.
Okay.
And that was a bonus. Like, I didn't have to pay rent that night. So I got up the courage and I asked Kat to come to my birthday party as a performer. And then,
topless tapas?
Yes, I had a topless tapas themed birthday party.
Where everybody was topless?
Okay.
I wore a bra. I'm very...
There was no... It was non-gendered specific across the board to destigmatize nudity because I feel very strongly about that. And then...
So you're in the right place.
I do. Yeah. I do. I was never meant to be anywhere else. And after that, I was like, all right, cool. We've worked together now. Now I'm going to pitch... this. We're going to have a meeting. I'm going to pitch doing a cabaret show. And that was it. That was, it was that easy. Kat was instantly on board.
Yeah.
I put together a tiny little bit of numbers. Like, it's going to cost this much. The rent is free. Or it's going to be great. It's going to be so wonderful.
Yeah. We met, we had a little lunch meeting at Top Dog. On Market Street.
Yeah, okay. That's where the magic happened.
That's where the magic happened.
Yeah. And we went to Crossroads afterwards, I think. And I bought you a white tuxedo dress.
Yeah, it was super cute.
Yeah, it was.
And so we, it was really just from, for the first two or three shows, we had no idea what was going to happen. The speakeasy could hold 100 people-ish, a little more, a little less.
And just by word of mouth, we sold out the first,
We sold out every single show at the conservatory.
Yep, that's the name of the speakeasy.
Then we were able to leverage that and say, hey, look, we've made something very cool.
Yeah.
Can we go do this show at the Great Star Theater? Because I was working there part-time as well. And it just kind of kept building. We went from that venue and we did a Kickstarter that went did very well. And we got into that venue. And then when it closed, we moved to Z Space and we kept just pivoting to each new venue because the show, we really try to mold ourselves to fit the space as best we can.
Okay.
The shows that were built for the tiny stage that was 7 feet by 4 feet.
It was a platform.
No, I was going to say, that's a very small stage.
Yeah, it was
a platform.
Yeah.
It's not what we made that was so intimate and so unique. We had to scale it for larger stages or for 40-foot-tall
ceilings and fly spaces.
And then when we
acrobats.
Yep.
And when we moved to the Alcazar Theater, and then it got really small, and it was only a 12-foot-tall ceiling.
But a bigger audience.
We've always tried.
And no curtain for a while. You know, we used to, because, you know, we want the show to, we don't want there to be any, empty space or downtime. Right. So we would close the curtains on a big act that just happened. And then we would have musicians perform in front of the curtain while we did a set change behind. And then when we moved to Z Space, all of a sudden we didn't have a curtain. And then when we moved to the Alcazar, we didn't have a curtain. And then the owner installed a curtain for us. And now we're at the Great American Music Hall, and there's no curtain.
We're always adapting.
Yes.
Obviously, there's a perfect world where it's a perfect cabaret venue, and it was made for us. But until then, we are constantly adapting to fit into the space so that we can keep doing what we're doing.
But speaking of fitting in, the show, you know, is about people who don't fit in. You know, it's a queer show.
Yeah.
What were people saying in the beginning where they're like, this resonates with me?
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel like San Francisco is the island of misfit toys, you know? Mm-hmm. And we all come here from, I mean, that's one of the lyrics from the Misfit Cabaret theme song. We're all from oppressive towns, you know, and we come here to find our community. Our people and ourselves. Because
I think ultimately the themes were never overt. in the beginning. It was always just understood that if you went to a Misfit Cabaret, there could be a reference to a really obscure 80s movie. There's going to be music that you might not have heard before. There's going to be all of these different things that have inspired Kat over the years, have inspired me over the years. There's going to be opera. There's going to be puppets. There's going to be things that give us joy.
Yeah.
And what really brought people together was it was all things that gave them joy too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but because it hits with people when I talk to people about it, like there's something there, you know. I mean, it's entertaining, but I can tell it speaks to people's spirit. Well, what you all do,
we try to be as authentic as we can to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think through that authenticity of, you know, Jordan was just talking about like the things that I really love. This is I'm sharing my weird little brain with everybody. And I think people can relate and be like, oh my God, I love that too. Oh my God, you too, you know? And I think we've discovered so much about ourselves since we moved to the Bay Area. You know,
yeah.
When I always knew I was different because I'm from North Carolina. I never quite fit in. And then when I moved to the Bay Area, it all just made sense. And I really found my community. And it wasn't until about a year ago that I realized I myself am queer. Mm-hmm. It took this journey of being here for 10 years to just being like, not only am I an ally, no, I am actually also a queer person. And so, and I think that, you know, Misfit Cabaret really helped me get there.
Yeah.
And discovering my true identity and my true self. Yeah.
And we had talked about this before the show, because you were on The Voice, you were mm-hmm. a contestant season 5.
Yeah.
That was about 12 years ago.
Yeah, something okay. like that.
Something like that. So that was a while ago. And yep, again, yeah. You were awesome on there. I was watching some of the old video footage, and you were like killing it. You
Thank
know,
you.
You were tearing it up on the mic. I said, go ahead, Kat. but the Kat I saw on that stage does not look like the Kat that I've seen, you know,
yeah.
since you've launched Misfit Cabaret. What inspired you? I don't know where you...
Drag queens.
Okay, I was going to say, like, what inspired you to...
Drag queens.
Yeah. It always goes back to drag queens.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
When I moved to the Bay Area, I just started going and seeing so many drag shows, fell in love with the drag scene, made a lot of friends in the drag community, and then started doing drag myself. Mm-hmm. And just being accepted into that community is just the most amazing thing ever. And I love the queens so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's like, I've never liked my actual hair. And it's so much fun. It's so liberating to be like, yeah, I can have this hair if I want to. Mm-hmm. I just have to pay for it. And boop, there it goes, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
As a black woman, because we do so much with our hair. So, yeah, uh-huh. It is fun, like, playing with the wigs and
yeah.
different style. That's why I said, like, you and Jordan, I said, I don't know if I would ever know how you all look outside of, like, just on a regular day. Because the pictures I've
tired.
Seen. Tired. I'm like, oh, that's them.
Just tired.
You wear so many cool costumes and wigs and makeup. And I just think that's just so neat. I mean, you know, you transform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to transform.
I mean, it's so much fun to play dress up. And think about when you're walking down the street and you see someone dressed really fun. It brightens your day.
It does.
Yeah.
It really, really does.
And I like that.
Yeah. Sometimes I wear a tutu. Sometimes I just like, sometimes I just feel like wearing one.
And I bet you get so many compliments.
People smile. Some people look like, what? But, you know, and I don't care.
That's their problem.
Yeah, I was like, nobody died. Everybody, it's okay.
You didn't wear that tutu for them.
That's right. I wore it for me. And
yep.
I was like,
uh-huh.
Yeah, and it makes me feel good.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, Misfit Cabaret is the perfect excuse to dress up.
Yeah.
We love it. Brightens our experience being on stage and looking out and seeing people that put the effort in to show up dress up.
We get so excited.
Oh, I love
it. We get so excited. And we have regulars. We have like diehard fans that have never missed a single Misfit Cabaret, and they'll spend months on their costume.
Wow.
You know, and it's wonderful to see.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
How many shows a year do you do in the Bay?
4.
Okay.
On average.
Yeah.
On average. Okay.
Quarterly.
They go to all
yeah.
of them.
So yes.
You're a lawyer for that.
And yeah, and sometimes they'll fly to Seattle.
Yeah.
Because they just can't miss a show.
That's
yeah.
wonderful. You know, if it brings you joy, I'm not mad at you. Okay,
yeah, right.
So this show that's coming up, the 10th anniversary.
Yes.
Till Death Do Us Part.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about the theme.
It is wedding horror.
Wedding horror.
Yes.
Okay.
So it is the eve of my wedding, And I'm just so excited because I'm getting married in the morning to Redacted. We're not going to say who it is.
Okay.
And I go to sleep, and all of my anxieties about getting married manifest into all of these nightmares. And so each guest performer that we have is going to represent a different anxiety I have about getting married.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, so why that for the 10th anniversary?
I just came up with it. I don't know. I just thought it would be fun to do like a kitschy, wet, like, you know, just super kitschy white wedding. But I think also weddings,
they lend themselves so well to horror.
I think that also weddings have traditionally been in the past about like, you know, straight or institutionalized, you know, whatever. And we want to flip that on its head, especially when, a lot of queer people are, you know, queer rights are being threatened. And so, one thing that we're doing that we're very excited about is after the show, the third act is going to be a reception. And if you want to get married for real
or for fun
or, you know, a wedding or do like a vow renewal.
Yeah,
you can do that because our drag queen, Johnny Rocket, is ordained. And all that we ask is that you donate $200 or more to an LGBTQ organization of your choice. We have some suggestions on our website.
Okay.
But that's all you need to do. And then you can come get married at Misfit Cabaret.
I don't know a wedding that's $200. So.
I know, right?
Yeah. And that's great.
And we're providing cake.
We're providing cake.
So people is highly encouraged and highly suggested maybe for people attending to dress up.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
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 And if you want to, you know, donate to an LGBTQ charity of your LGBTQ plus charity of your choice and you don't want to get married, it's fine. We just want to encourage it, you know.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Misfit Cabaret founders Kat Robichaux and Jordan Nathan. Their next event, Misfit Cabaret Presents Till Death Do Us Part, is happening next Friday, September 12th at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. I want to play a little music folks can... I mean, we heard a little bit of you singing in the beginning, but I just want to just go a little deeper and dive into your voice. So let's play one of your original songs, which Kat writes original music for this show. Mm-hmm. So for all the shows.
Yeah, I write, on average, 2 songs for every show that we do.
That's a lot of writing and singing.
Yeah, I've written 52 songs for Misfit Cabaret.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so this is one of the 52. It's called Charade. Let's take a listen.
Sequence, catch the light from the metal cans. Look how she's spinning, she's the candle, calls the sailors in. None of it is real, or real enough to feel. And that's the appeal, smile and hold still. None of this is ever gonna hurt. That's how we turn it off, we turn it
So that was the song Charade, and the music video is fun. It was filmed at the Grand Star Theater in San Francisco's Chinatown, and Jordan, you're in it too, but it has everything you can expect from a Misfit Cabaret show: burlesque, drag, aerial, puppets. I like that it kind of takes you behind the stage. And so I was looking at the lyrics. Can you talk about the meaning of the song and how it fits into the legacy of Misfit Cabaret?
Yeah, it's about escapism, you know, and it's just about like how we are trying to provide, you know, a safe haven and a home and just respite from the world that is burning, constantly burning.
Yeah.
And this is, Misfit Cabaret is a place where you can come, you can relax, you can get dolled up and just enjoy the spectacle and feel like you're a part of something truly unique for a few hours. And then you can carry that with you in your heart and
brag about it to your friends.
Brag about it to your friends, yeah. Jordan's such a good producer, I swear. Like every time I'm like talking about flowery stuff over here, and she's like, yes, but also here's where you can get the flowers.
Shout out to the producers. And I appreciate my producer, Porfira Rangel, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jordan, you heard the cats. So who are the cats?
Oh, what?
That's part of Misfit Cabaret. Who are the talent?
In this show, we have Burlesque.
Frankie Fictitious.
Burlesque Hall of Fame winner.
Yep.
Frankie Fictitious. We have a longtime collaborator of ours, Dave Hasbrook of Shadow Circus Creature Theater.
Shout out to him. He's been on Sights and
Sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible puppeteer in the Bay Area. Yes. Redbone.
Yes.
A phenomenal, like, smoke show of a burlesque performer. We've been trying to have her for years. We're thrilled to have her now. Johnny Rocket, who mm-hmm. is one of my most favorite drag queens and friends. He has been in probably the most Misfit Cabaret, so it's super fitting to have him in the 10-year anniversary. We also have Red Fafilth, who is a phenomenal drag artist in the Bay Area. Okay. And we have Christine Lee, who is an incredible circus artist who's going to be doing a stacked chair balancing.
Oh, acrobatic, contortion, chairs situation. It's terrifying and wonderful.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the band, we have Brendan Getzel, our musical director, who has been in almost every single show.
Every single one. He only missed, we did 2 weeks of one show, and he missed 1 week because he got COVID.
And it was the most difficult thing in the world to replace this man.
We needed three people to replace him.
Wow.
He is a truly spectacular human being.
He's amazing, yeah.
And
we have Ben Vicini on drums. We have Dakota Salazar on guitar. And we have Nick Jong on bass.
Yes, yep. We have a live band with every single show. Kat sings 99% of the music in the show, with the exception of our drag performers perform to a backing track, and mm-hmm. Brendan also guest sings in the show.
Of course, he has a phenomenal voice.
I mean, multi-talented.
Multi-talented.
Multi-talented yes. musician.
You know what I love about this show is that it is cabaret. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that's considered like a vintage art form, but it's mm-hmm. still so cool. And like, it's so cool that people are still into it, you know.
Because it's tangible.
Yeah.
You know, you can reach out and touch it.
Yeah.
And we can reach out and we can touch you.
I want to touch your closet.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of minutes because when I saw you both walking in, I was like, oh my God. What do your closets look like? Is your closet
overflowing?
Overflowing, horrible.
Stuffed.
A nightmare.
we do have a storage unit that has almost all of the sets and props
costumes
for the show specifically. Yeah. But then our own personal closets are overflowing.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is something that I need to work on, but I have an ongoing growing addiction to vintage and thrift shopping. Mm-hmm. It's like the hunt for me. It's ridiculously fun. Yeah, so that I'm just so, everything that I'm wearing pretty much is thrifted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just started a job working as social media assistant for Dark Garden Corsetry, and we did a count, and my corset collection has ballooned. So it's...
She has 15 corsets now.
Shout out to Autumn.
Oh, shout out to Marianne Faulkner. They are incredible over there. Female-owned local small business that has been making corsets in the Bay Area for 20-plus years.
I mean, you want to feel decadent?
That's what you do. You go to Dark Garden and you
that's the true
get
San
some
Francisco
leather
experience.
Goods. Yep. You get something sheer and lacy or just something that'll cinch mm-hmm. you in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she's been on the show and her work is beautiful.
So within the first 2 months of me moving to San Francisco, I got my first Dark Garden corset. Autumn and Dark Garden has been on our stage over the last 10 years, multiple times.
Nice.
Longest collaborator we've had with a brand partner. So we could not have done this without giving them a shout out and collaborating with them on our 10-year anniversary.
Definitely shout out to them. Like I said, I've seen her work, and so it's really, really beautiful. We have like 20 seconds left. 10 years, what do you want to see in the next 10 years?
Survive.
No. Kat and I are just going to keep doing what we're doing, keep growing. Mm-hmm. And I love this woman to death. Yeah. Till death do us part,
till
baby.
Till death do us part, you know?
And they're holding hands as they're saying that. So that's true. Not just business partners, but just good friendship.
Friendship. Know? That's, we wouldn't do this if it weren't for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for entertaining us. I look forward to going to the show. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you.
Just for what I've watched. And I've heard so many great things about you. So just thank you for opening that space for people to just be themselves and enjoy the art that, you know, and the artists that you bring on stage that are from the Bay Area.
Well, this, the Bay Area community just continues to give back to us. And we just, it, you know, You want to give back to your family.
This is the greatest job in the world.
It really is.
I've been speaking with Misfit Cabaret founders Kat Robichaux and Jordan Nathan. Misfit Cabaret presents Till Death Do Us Part. It's next Friday, September 12th at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. And next up, we revisit a documentary about female scientists trying to stop little brown bats from becoming extinct. Keep it locked right here.
Come with me, I'll take you far away.
Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darden. Bats are very important for the environment and our health. Yes, our as in humans. Unfortunately, some of our furry flying friends are facing a disease that is pushing them to extinction. It's called white knoll syndrome, and it has killed well over 6 million bats. You should be concerned because what happens to them affects us. But there are scientists trying to keep little brown bats around. Filmmaker Kristen Tiesch tells us about a group of female scientists working to save bats in her documentary, The Invisible Mammal. Here's a clip of Dr. Winifred Frick out of Santa Cruz. She's the chief scientist at Bat Conservation International, and she's explaining her team's strategy of saving bats.
There's been some more recent research where we've seen that in some of those areas where the bats are holding on, bats tend to get fatter in the fall, and that gives them the edge that they need to be able to survive. We are taking that information and thinking, well, how can we use this interesting result as a conservation strategy? And so we're thinking about ways in which we can help bats get fat.
The award-winning film will be screened at the Smith Rafael Film Center in San Rafael tomorrow, Thursday, on September 4th. I spoke with Kristen this past spring about her film, and here's a portion of that interview. We talked about the Fat Bat Project, and then I just want to go over about what white knoll syndrome is. Mm-hmm. So, bats stay cold during hibernation, mm-hmm. and there's a fungus. It's, the abbreviation is PD. It's a very long name. Y'all have to look it up.
Pseudogymnoascus destructans.
Hey, that's why she's a filmmaker. So short for that is PD. So it gets on their skin, and you see these little white dots on their little bodies, and then the fungus causes lesions on their skins. And so while the bats are hibernating, I guess the lesions make them wake up, because I think if I had lesions on my skin, I'd be waking up.
Yes.
And so they're waking up too frequently, I guess because their skin is irritated. And then this burns up their fat reserves that they've been saving during hibernation. And so they're burning fat. And so then when they wake up and it's still cold outside and snowing, there's no food. And so then they starve to death. So that's where the white nose syndrome. And then you see these little white specks on their nose.
Yeah, the fungus starts growing on their nose. And as you mentioned, it spreads to their bodies. And so what a lot of people don't realize is that the vast majority of bats in North America are bug-eating bats. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, when they wake up in the middle of a winter, there are no bugs around to eat.
Right.
So they're hungry because they've burned up all of their fat reserves. They're looking around to eat, and there's nothing to eat. So they drop down. And what happened, you know, when the scientists first started detecting caves and habitats, you know, with white nose syndrome, they would go in to do counts and surveys, and they would walk into the cave and the whole floor would be covered with bats.
Yeah, the bat bones, the bat skeletons from the ones that was, when I saw that made me very sad.
Yeah.
Because they hibernate in clusters. So I didn't know, I didn't really know much about bats, but they hibernate in clusters. Like some caves, there may be a million bats in there.
Yeah.
So it's easy for the disease to spread.
Exactly. They're hibernating right next to each other, and once the fungus is in that habitat, it'll just spread really easily from bat to bat. And back to the bug eating part, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of people don't realize that bats do us a favor by eating so many bugs, right? And so they eat their body weight in bugs every single night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So they really go to town.
They go to town. Imagine. I think one time I talked to one of the women in my film, Quirky Quirk, mentioned, you know, it's sort of like a 100-pound human eating 400 quarter-pounders.
Oh, my goodness.
You know?
They're really fascinating mammals.
They are.
Yeah, really, really fascinating. This is a public health issue, too. And you mentioned that in the film. There was a scientist from the University of Chicago who noticed there were higher human infant death rates in counties where there was white nose syndrome.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we talked about bats eating bugs, and so they help farmers because they eat bugs that attack or eat the crops, and so farmers don't have to spend money on insecticides. And so, but when you spray the insecticides, it can spread into the water, our drinking water, and so that gets passed on to us,
right?
And they save farmers in the agricultural business a lot of money too as well.
Right. So bats save farmers, let's start there, tens of billions of dollars in the United States alone. You know, I think they save the corn industry like over $1 billion a year just for that one industry, you know. And so so when we think about bats, you know, we should think about them as these members of our shared ecosystem who do so much for us. And so this other fact that you were bringing up about the insecticides and their connection to infant mortality, yeah, that was Dr. E.L. Frank from the University of Chicago, and his study was published, I think, late last year, and it shows that infant mortality rates went up, I think, 7.9% in the counties.
Yeah.
where white nose syndrome was present. And that's because when bats are not around and they're not able to help the farmers out by eating the bugs that would eat their crops, then farmers are forced to apply pesticides and insecticides. Not only does that also, that costs the farmers a lot of money, but then down the line, for sure, like, we're the ones who live next to these farms or drink the water systems that are, you know, that are near these farms.
Right.
And so the insecticides get into our water supply and in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that is one public health concern. The other public health concern that is brought up in the film is just the fact that humans have encroached on wildlife habitat.
Right.
And there's so little wildlife habitat left, you know, in the world.
Right.
You know, not just in our country, but everywhere.
Yeah, globally, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so so when the wildlife habitat shrinks, then there's more chances of encountering wildlife in human communities.
Right. It's funny because I've been noticing a lot of bear videos.
Bears.
I was like, I don't know if it's my algorithm on social media, but I see these videos of bears coming into neighborhoods, like in Southern California.
Yeah.
And people are surprised, but I'm thinking like the fires. And I love what this one of the scientists said, like, you know, when you see these kind of changes or even like different diseases coming from animals, it's usually because it's humans' fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we have a few more minutes. I want to talk about how beautiful this film is.
Oh,
so my producer, Porfirio Rangel, he watched 15 minutes, the first 15 minutes of your film. He had like pages of notes. So
hopefully good notes.
They were great notes. So he enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the film. But visually, it's beautiful. And, you know, to see these bats, like, I was like, oh, they do look kind of cute. You know, and he went under caves, too. So can you talk about that? Like, so we have a couple of minutes, but just talk about filming it. And
sure. Well, as you know, bats, they come out at night.
Right.
And they're fast. Some of them fly up to 100 miles per hour.
Right.
And they're tiny, you know, they're just a few ounces. So they're very hard to film, really, So when I was first interviewing Dr. Frick, she mentioned that she actually knew a bat cinematographer, somebody who specializes in filming bats. And he's from Austin, Texas. His name is Skip Hobby. And, you know, because Austin is a great town to see bats in, he's had so many so many encounters and experiences, you know, being able to film the bats there. And you want somebody who knows what they're doing.
Right, right.
So as soon as Fred told me about Skip, I knew that he was the person that I wanted to hire to film, you know, these beautiful scenes. We wanted to make sure that when people watched this film, they would walk away having seen bats in a whole new light.
Yeah.
In a way that they had never seen them before, in slow motion with a beautiful, like, sunlight in through their wings.
Yeah, and you all captured all of that. And then just seeing people like Nurse Bats who...
Oh, yeah, Corky.
Yeah, she's in Sacramento.
Corky, the bat rescuer. She's in... Yeah, Davis.
Yeah, so she's in
Davis. The bat rescuer. She rescues these little baby bats and rehabilitates them and releases them back to the wild.
That was filmmaker Kristen T. Esch. Watch The Invisible Mammal tomorrow, Thursday, September 4th, at the Smith Rafael Film Center in San Rafael. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. This weekend, Saturday, September 6th, is the Northern California Book Awards at the San Francisco Main Library. The event is free to the public. Go to poetryflash.org for more. And we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.